Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
It's time for our industry review. We're going to go beyond the headlines and take a closer look at the job itself. What it's really like to work as a newspaper columnist in Ireland in 2026. Has the role changed? What are the pressures? And what does it take to stay relevant? Delighted to be joined by three people who definitely know the inside out of this business. Tanya Sweeney, she's a features writer and columnist with the Irish Independent, joins us, as does Mick Clifford. He's a special correspondent, I'm going to ask him what that is, of the Irish Examiner. And Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Independent and the Irish Daily Mail, also joins us. So good morning, one and all. Mick, I might start with you. What does a special correspondent? It sounds like Charlie Byrne was, God rest him.
Jose Mourinho, yeah. well, to be quite frank with you, Bobby, basically means they haven't a proper title to give me, so they gave me that. I'm not covering a specific area, so to throw something in front of it, could have put I can think of a few other choice words people might have suggested, but they put special just in front of it there.
Mick, tell us about the job and your route to the job. You came to it, having done a few other bits and pieces.
Yeah, I came to Swanwick late. I did a degree in civil engineering in UCC. I tell people I was the second worst engineer to come out of UCC in the 80s.
Who was the worst?
Well, you always have to hope somebody's worse than you, put it that way. But I know I worked at that for a few years and then I kind of fell out of it and I worked from the neck down exclusively, to put it that way, for a while. And then I went back and I did a course in a master's in DCU in journalism. And that was a fantastic start. And I got in because the great thing about that thing was they sent you on a placement.
Yeah.
And actually, they sent me on a placement to the Star newspaper. Now, I was not into tabloids, to be honest with you. And I was a bit disappointed. But I can absolutely say it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because the way tabloids are written, if you want to learn the writing craft, to my mind, in my experience, it's the best route to go. I got a fantastic training in how to write properly, because you have to write to direct, to the point.
So it's maximum meaning in the fewest possible words.
And you have to appeal to the readers. You can't just write expecting the readers to jump on you. You have to shove it out to them. And that, to me, was a fantastic training. I spent 2 years as a sub-editor there, and
Stay with us. Let's talk to Tanya Sweeney next. Tanya, you're very welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Now, you started writing as a teenager, did you not? So you were always destined to be a journalist.
Well, I was 10 when I was writing for the local newspaper. So, yeah, I had a children's page and they used to send me off on little assignments to like McDonald's, backstage at McDonald's, the Coca-Cola factory in Coolock, went to Dublin Zoo. I think I sent a letter to the president, then president of Ireland, going, the children of Ireland need to know who you are. That was President Hillary. He never responded, but so I was doing that sort of shoe leather stuff from a really early age.
Yeah.
And I also had to get my photo taken with the competition winners who finished the word search properly. So yeah, it was fun times.
And you did an arts degree together with a master's in journalism, so probably a fairly traditional route to what you're doing now.
Yes and no. I mean, I went to London to do the master's and then I went into the music industry and worked in A&R, which is the department in record companies and publishers that sign the bands and kind of court them and look after them when they're, you know, as they're being recorded. So I worked in and film music supervision, and I worked in the music video department of a record label. So I did that for a while. And then I kind of moved home to Dublin from London and started working in music journalism and hot press. That was my first kind of writing gig.
Yeah.
And I loved music journalism so much. It doesn't pay the bills so well, unfortunately, in this country, but
I think you've said yourself, to be paid for music journalism is like being paid to go to sleep. It's like it's just, it doesn't get any better than that.
Absolutely. No, I was just so happy to be in the room at all. I mean, the fact that they were paying me anything was an absolute miracle.
All right. Well, stay with us. Brenda Power is also with us. Brenda, sorry, it took me a while to get to you.
Okay.
You sort of came into this business somewhat by accident.
Totally by accident.
Yeah.
My big interest in school would have been art. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do with it. And but I really liked our English teacher, and I was English was one of the few things I was also reasonably okay at. And at one stage in leaving cert, she decided she'd go around the class and ask everybody what they wanted to do. And a friend of mine, Elaine Cobb, who went on to work for CBS in Paris, was in the front row, and she said, journalism. And I'm at the back of this class, like, brilliant. I'll say journalism. The English teacher's going to love that. So I said, journalism. She said, oh, yeah, that'd be a good fit for you. So afterwards, Elaine came up to me and said, have you applied to Rathmines College of Commerce? I said, I've never heard of the place. She said, well, I have, and I have two application forms. Would you like one? I said, yeah, sure. And I sent it in, and we both got in. There was something like 1,000 applicants that year, and they took in 24. And so as part of the training then, the placement involved spending time in the Irish press, yeah. 2 months in the Irish press. And basically when I finished, they took me back. So I was with the Irish press. I started off as a court reporter. And, you know, when you talk about how you get into column writing, I suppose there was a bit of colour writing involved in court reporting. And I'd always wanted to do law as well. So it was very, you know, it was doubly interesting to me. But I suppose if you show a bit of flair, then eventually you'll get asked to write a column.
Very interesting. Mick, can I, like, I see it in this business as well, that the amount of work that you've got to do for nothing, and this applies, I always feel sorry for the young interns.
Yeah.
Because they really, the way the business kind of works is that you have to give yourself at no remuneration at some stage in order to get anywhere. And it applies in radio as well.
Absolutely. There has to be a vocational element. In other words, like, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have a good education, you have to want, particularly in newspapers now, because, you know, people say something, it's a sunset industry, you know, it's not the way it was. Newspapers don't have the role they have. They don't have the sales they have. To my mind, if one of my kids or someone young said to me they wanted to get into journalism, I wouldn't go as far as this, but it would be in the direction of if they suggested to me they wanted to be an actor, for instance. In other words, you need to have a serious passion because it's going to be difficult
and that
enough.
That says that if you want to do this, you have to get your money somewhere else. It's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you're not going to, it's not going to be easy to make a living. If you keep at it, you'll make a living. It's going to be tough. Yeah. It's going to be, so you need something else, and that something else needs to be a passion for it. And in some ways, Bobby, you could say that perhaps that augurs well for journalism in the future, and that the people who do get into it will be even more driven by the principles of it.
I think you might be right that the full circle actually will approach, because maybe put that to you, Tanya, with everybody is now a commentator, everybody's got a podcast, everybody's a blogger. Does that irk you, or do you think, as Mick says, that it might just go full circle and people will eventually value the people you know, who actually do the writing?
Well, the other side of that coin, of course, is that you could end up with just a load of hobbyists, you know, and with a very specific upper middle class worldview coming out every single week, which I'm not sure is necessarily great. I mean, look, I think personally, there is money to be made in journalism and freelance journalism. I made it a very comfortable living as a freelance journalist. And what you have to do is just be a very, very safe pair of hands for an editor. You need to be their go-to person.
Yeah.
If they have an assignment on the go, you need to be the person that they go, right, she will just obviously smash that, provide the clean copy, file on time, and it'll be fine. You'll never be out of work if you're good.
Yeah.
So I do think, and, you know, Mick is right. It is like saying to someone, you know, someone says to me, you know, I want to be a journalist. I'm like, yeah, okay. It is like the acting thing, you know, you really do need to want this so badly.
Yeah.
But I do think if you're good, you're able to find a niche, if you're able to network, if you've got a pointy elbow on you, you'll do okay.
Yeah. And what about the internship and the working for nothing and all the stuff that you kind of have to do along the way?
Well, the fear of that, obviously, is that if you, you know, have people who are working for nothing, then the journalism is essentially devalued. And every editor thinks that they can, you know, put an issue to bed on a budget of about €12. And that becomes the standard, as opposed to, you know, just interns.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of freelance journalists who will just say to everybody, please don't work for free, because then you're putting pressure on, you know, much more established, seasoned, experienced journalists to also work for free, or at least bring down their rates.
Yeah. Brenda, how much of yourself, I often say to people that, you know, to be a newspaper columnist, to be a broadcaster, you know, you need to have lived a bit of a life. Like, if you're to give an opinion, you have to have kind of done stuff, you know, in the real world to almost make you credible.
Well, I suppose I come from a reporting and feature writing background anyway. So obviously that feeds into your experience going back. I mean, you know, just talking about the early days in journalism when I worked for the Irish Press. And Tanya's quite right. Like 90% of success, I don't know who said this, is turning up and simply being reliable, being there. But, you know, it was such an exciting job. In the 80s, the Troubles were on, you know, Ireland was a very, very different place. But yeah. It was always, you know, exciting to be sent to Belfast for a story. I covered IRA funerals and, you know, the absolute tension and you know, nervousness in the air. There was nothing really in the South to replicate that at the time. So, I mean, over the years, in spite of yourself, you tend to build up a kind of an almost a wellspring of experiences, meeting different types of people, doing different types of interviews, covering different types of stories. As you say, of course, your own life experience feeds into it as well. In my early 30s, then I went and I did the bar because I felt I nearly knew as much about law, having covered the courts for so long. So, I mean, that's another, you know, there are lots of careers that journalism kind of feeds into. Or kind of spin-off interests that journalists develop. But, I mean, when you talk about column writing, I suppose, you know, you have to draw on a lot of your own personal experience.
And you have to offer an opinion, do you not?
You kind of do, yeah. That so, goes with the territory.
Like, it's, yeah. And with that opinion comes somebody either likes it or they don't. Yeah. So do you just accept that as part of the job?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's no point in having the same opinion as everybody else. That's not to say, and I think you can always tell when people are writing the opinion they think is the right one or the acceptable one. You know, you have to be prepared to say, look, this is what I actually believe, and if I'm asked, I can defend it. And you know, some people will agree with me and some people won't.
Yeah.
And some people will give you dog's abuse because they don't agree with you.
But we know that, Mick, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Jesus, no question about it.
Tell me, going back to, so I suppose, the business piece of it, the sum of the parts. So if you're a columnist, you have a podcast, you might get a few quid for appearing on radio shows or whatever it is.
Very few.
Well, you'd be well paid here. Is the portfolio approach one that you do out of necessity? Because it's also, profile is also important, is it not?
Just that's what I was going to say about that business of profile. Like, for instance, I'm employed by the Irish Examiner. They like seeing me on programmes like this because, you know, it ups the profile of one of their journalists, therefore, hopefully by extension of the newspaper itself.
You and should then, be paying us, Mick.
I should, yeah. And then, then you know, the other stuff comes along, you branch. That is the other element of the way change has come about. You have to be prepared to do everything. I mean, I do a weekly podcast now. The notion, 5-10 years ago, that I'd ever be doing a podcast as part of my job, I just would say, for the boards. But everything has changed completely.
But it does feed into, you know, Mick Clifford's the brand, because we all do. And again, it's brought us to a point of, you do have your own brand.
Well, yes, you do your own brand. I hate that word, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Like, I suppose.
Well, maybe your own identity.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing. But the point Brenda was making, I have to say, about it being exciting. I mean, I still remember one of the first things I did. I showed a piece I'd written to somebody who's a very well-known journalist, and he made some reference to your work. And I still remember thinking to myself, work? Jeez, this isn't work. I enjoyed doing this, you know, and haven't worked a day in my life since, you know, Bobby.
Yeah, well, that's it. Tanya, what about your own sort of curiosity, your own opinions? Just listen to what Mick says there. You moved from being a freelancer, where you said, you know, you made decent money at it, to being a staffer. Is there a remarkable difference in your commercial world when you move from one to the other?
Oh gosh,
security versus finance.
I mean, look, knowing that there's going to be a certain amount of money coming into the account no matter what, and, you know, holiday pay, all of those things just give you back this tiny bit of bandwidth, you know, you're not really stressing about. I mean, I remember as a freelancer, it was not uncommon, especially during like the crash years, for an editor, a section editor to call me going, that section's gone now, sorry. And there was absolutely nothing that could be done about that.
Yeah.
The section was literally evaporated overnight, and with it went your earnings on that section. It happens so often. And I do remember scrambling so much to try and find another editor to kind of lean on and to you know, share out that financial sort of, it was like being on a raft a little bit. You were always just looking for ballast, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas when you're a staffer, I mean, there's something fantastic about, you know, knowing the vision of the newspaper, knowing exactly what those editors want and what the paper needs. And you just feed into that instead of being all things to all people. I had to be, you know, a certain type of writer, you know, as Mick says, for the Daily Star. You'd have to be another type of writer for the Irish Times or for Stellar magazine. At least this way, you know, the writing stays sort of consistent and you know what they're looking for.
Yeah. We have a few texts in. We might have a look at them. Big fan of mixed journalism over the years. Has he ever felt harassed or even scared for his safety, considering some of the things he's taken on? That comes in from David.
Harassed, yes. Safety, no. To be fair, there are people very high profile and tragedies of journalists.
Yeah.
Over the, I wouldn't have come into that realm at all. But I feel, as Brenda, harassment is part of the,
yeah,
part of the job, you know.
Brenda, another text says, are your guests saying you don't really need to go to college? That comes in from Jean. I don't think you were saying that, but
no, I mean, I went to college. I did a diploma in journalism in Rathmines. And did the bar as well. So you do, although I often, we all get asked from time to time by young people who say, you know, how do you get into journalism? And I said, well, you know, what you learned in college was great. And we learned things like tabloid writing, which told you exactly that you put all the information that you can safely, legally and informatively into the first paragraph. All of that, those skills were useful. But I always say, look, go down the courts, you know, get into a court, learn how to cover a court case. There's very little, you know, general coverage of the courts these days in the way that they used to be back in when I was freelancing. You'll always find a story, pick up a story, just start working organically. I remember a friend of mine who was a commissioning editor in RTE said, you're always getting people ringing and saying, oh, can you give me a start? Can you give me a shift? Can you whatever? So then you ring them on a Friday evening, and a wet Friday evening, say, can you go out to Tala to cover a football match? Oh, no, man, I'm, you know.
Well,
and that's it. Name, drawn, a line.
You know. People know there are lists that exist, maybe a lot of them in people's heads, but there are lists. He or she will never be coming on here again.
It's like any job. Once they're willing to go the extra mile, that's noticed straight away. But you look at people, it's a slightly previous generation, people like Eamon Dunphy, Gene Kerrigan. I'm not sure did they even finish school, and they're fantastic journal. But unfortunately, the system is such now that, you know, you nearly have to go to college, all right.
Although I still don't believe that a master's in journalism makes you any better than someone
absolutely
who comes out, as Tanya said, start writing at 10, 15, whatever, send it up into the local paper and have an actual passion for it rather than an academic.
And Brenda, your own legal experience also helps you in another way. Again, the old libel question.
You think that, Bobby? Although I've had one editor saying to me, if you have a law degree, how come
I've only libeled two people in 16 years. That's not bad, is it?
My editor said, how come you're the one we have to get the lawyers to read most carefully?
Tanya, what about that? Do you worry about libel?
Well, I go to my legal training very regularly, so I'm keeping everything crossed on that front.
Yeah. What about the future of the profession, Tanya? And, you know, you've talked about the water circling the drain. I know it's a term, and it's kind of a scary term, because it does cast a negative cloud, maybe over the future of the profession. But what do you actually think?
I mean, look, the thing is the demise has been, you know, exaggerated time and time again. We're told the whole time it is a dying profession, and it is, as you say, circling the drain. I'm still filing. I'm still reporting. You know, there's still an appetite for what I do. Obviously, the scepter of AI is sort of hanging there in the peripheral vision. But, you know, I have to believe for my own sanity that people will always want, you know, either a human voice in their column, or they will want, or they will be able to be at least literate about AI slop and just go, I don't really want that. I mean, I think there's, you know, is there a place for AI tools in journalism? Probably. But I do hope that there will be an appetite for boots on the ground journalism and reporting, and just that human connection, because that's what journalism is. You know, it's just been us reporting on the human condition and the quirks of daily life if you're a columnist. And I really hope that that will never be threatened.
Yeah. The role of the editor is also important. By the way, just to clarify, we do pay interns here at News Talk. I had a note in my ear from the editor in case I didn't tell you that. But Mick, what about yourself in terms of the future? Listen to Tanya there.
Yeah.
And you said it yourself. This could go full circle.
It could. And I mean, Tanya's point about you don't want it to get to a scene like, perhaps in some ways the bar is whereby people who are better off can afford to go through the lean years, because if that was the case, you're talking about people from a particular class that would only be a very narrow worldview, you know, and that could be an issue. But in a broader sense, the economic model is in serious trouble, and therefore it's a question of how do you get past that. Like, we're all of have a certain amount of experience, but if you're talking about a young person coming into it now, it's tough. It definitely is. But I mean, it's very rewarding in terms of, it's not like some jobs I've even done in my youth. You don't dread Monday morning to get up and go to work.
All right. On that note, we leave it. Thanks to my guests, Tanya Sweeney, Mick Clifford and Brenda Power. Keep doing what you're doing, because it's great.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.